Are you ready to experience the rich interconnection of spirituality, orientation, and identity? If so, plan to attend Liberating Your Divine Identity, a retreat at Unity Village during Pride Month, June 9th to the 12th. This soul-filled retreat is facilitated by LGBTQIA+ Unity Ministers, with workshops and ceremonies to cultivate a deeper awareness of our spiritual nature. Register at unityvillage.org/IAmDivine2022.
Serving spiritual seekers around the world. Unity Online Radio. Welcome to World Spirituality, exploring the unity within all cultures and faith traditions with Paul John Roach, minister of Unity Church of Fort Worth in Fort Worth, Texas. Discover the universal principles present in all the world's religions and take an incredible journey to new understanding. Now, here is your host, Paul John Roach.
So hello and welcome to World Spirituality on the Unity Online Radio Network. Yes, I'm your host, Paul John Roach, coming to you from Unity Fort Worth in Fort Worth, Texas. Today our theme is When Spirituality and Politics Collide. This has always been a pertinent topic, of course, but it's even more pertinent today in our seemingly fractured and divided world, both in terms of the U.S. and abroad. And joining me to discuss this is Peter Boland, college professor, singer, songwriter, author, and prolific blogger, who is not afraid to voice his political views while at the same time teaching the eternal truths of spirituality and seeing how those nest in each other. Also with me is Reverend Paul Tenaglia. He's currently the senior minister of Unity of Bellevue in Washington State, former leader of the Dynamic Unity community in New York City. Paul has had a career as a actor, singer, and dancer off-Broadway and in theaters around the U.S. and Canada. So it's a joy to welcome both Paul and Peter to today's show. Welcome.
Thank you. Good to be with you.
It's great. It's great to be here with the two Pauls. I appreciate it so much.
Yeah, there we go. Yeah, excellent. Yeah, you know, the genesis of this show came from the many forthright posts and blogs that happened around the election of our current president. It was a time of, you know, where there was a lot of fraught energy, it seems to me, and some of us couldn't believe the result there in November, but we're living with it right now. And as a minister, you know, I get uncomfortable talking politics, especially in my role as minister. And I'm sure you can address that a little bit, Paul. You know, although there are many, you know, pastors around the country, especially in, it seems, more, I would say, fundamentalist persuasions of Christianity, who don't have a problem, you know, espousing and supporting politicians and talking politics. So first question there is, where is the line, you know, of separation of church and state versus personal freedom of expression? Because some people say, you know, okay, there is a separation of church and state, but I have the right to say what I want. So sometimes things collide around those two issues. So let's jump in. Whoever wants to go first with that one.
Paul, I'll let you go.
Well, you know, I saw something the other day on CNN. It said that evangelicals today don't really care about what Trump or the deposed Alabama governor says or does, as long as their right to abortion and their right to criticize or do away with marriage equality is met. So we have a really interesting moral dilemma, I think, in this country, that they're electing people on the basis of what they will give them, and that the pastors in these churches are more than willing to step forward and say, this is the way you should vote. So I think it's a really quite an interesting place we're at in our country now, as far as this divide, this or imaginary divide of politics and spirituality or religion more aptly, I think, in this case. As far as what I think we are obligated to do in unity from the pulpit or sharing from our classrooms is to state what works for us as a spiritual being having this wonderful human adventure on this planet, and what part of our political discourse gets in the way of us having this wonderful free flow of freedom.
Yeah,
for our lives here. I think that we're not about telling people who to vote for, but simply, according to our unity teachings, we do have freedom to love who we want, to create the families that we want, and to have the to make a choice for our own bodies. And if politics or politicians get in the way of that, I think we have not only the right, but the responsibility to step forward and say, well, that is not the way of unity or new thought or even progressive spirituality, if you will.
You know, right. This is a really challenging issue, and not being a minister, I don't have to walk the walk that you fellas do, especially as the leaders of 501c3 organizations, which the IRS explicitly prohibits you from. I'm just going to read the sentence here. You can't participate in or intervene in, including publishing or distributing of statements, any political campaign on behalf of or in opposition to any candidate for public office. So the statute is directed mostly at the support of a particular candidate and in any publication, which I assume would include Facebook posts. But me, of course, am free of all of that sort of thing. But nonetheless, as Paul was just mentioning, what does it mean to teach spirituality if that doesn't mean if that doesn't call us to transform? And what does transformation mean if that doesn't call us to show up in the field of action as moral beings? There's a long ancient history, you know, the IRS aside, of prophets and gurus and other spiritual teachers taking positions. There's such a strong biblical imperative to feed the poor, to not judge, to treat the alien among us as ourselves. It's baffling how some people ask us to separate our spiritual life from our political life when the two really are branches of the same tree. Politics is simply the codification of our values, and what is spirituality but the search for a foundation for our values? It seems impossible to separate.
I think the concern for me comes where we start putting the other side down in some way. You know, if we're teaching spirituality, I can see there's a lot of difference between my unity philosophy and a more fundamentalist approach. But I'm not spending my time castigating the fundamentalists. So I just let them get on with what they need to do. But I want to promote my viewpoint and what makes sense for me. But I think sometimes when we get into these political discussions, we begin to champion our own side at the expense of someone else. And that's where it gets problematic for me. You know, I think we should keep the high watch and simply focus on what we believe rather than pulling somebody else down. That's a concern for me.
Well, in considering our unity teachings, which state that affirmations or making firm our truth is not only a right but an obligation that we have, when somebody is stepping forward, I really don't care, and I fully support anybody believing what they want to believe. If you have a church that doesn't believe in marriage equality or that women have the right to do whatever, if you're a member of that church or organization and you keep that as part of what you do, so be it. But when you start moving into the public sphere where you're telling me I don't have the right to do something, then you're entering into my personal area, then I'm going to step forward and make a loud and wonderfully positive affirmation that this cannot be done in the name of God.
Right.
As an openly gay man, politics does indeed enter it when any group or any religion tries to stop my right to marry the person I choose, to create the family that I choose. And when that happens, you bet that politics and spirituality are going to begin to blend. Not from my choice, but because somebody else has stepped forward and said, we're going to stop you from having the right to, for you to do what you want to do in this country.
Right.
And that is not acceptable.
But even in that case, your central focus is on the issue at hand, right? So that's the important thing. You're not attacking these other people because they hold that contrary viewpoint that would seem to limit your rights. You're saying, I stand for these rights, and I think there's a difference.
Right, absolutely. And that's the point that you made earlier, Paul, that I think is so huge, that to avoid the personal and to avoid speaking to specific personalities, whether that be candidates or people in the White House or voters who you disagree with, and instead focus on issues. I think it's imperative to talk about our values, how we treat the alien, how we treat the refugee. You can't talk about refugees today. You can't talk about school lunch programs. You can't talk about LGBT rights and so on without being political. And I think we err on the side of timidity sometimes, but one can take a strong stance that sounds political without addressing any particular people. But on the other hand, toes are always going to get stepped on, and to not be timid about that. We talk a lot in New Thought about affirmations, but a little deeper down into the old school New Thought world, in the Unity side particularly, is the equally important idea of denials, of calling lies lies. And taking positions is affirmations and denials, especially when those powerful claims made by others impinges on our core beliefs about the infinite value of human beings and universal human rights and all of the rest of it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, but denials. Let me say something there though, because denials and affirmations, it's not a dualistic system here. And I think people misunderstand what a release or denial is. A release or denial is not giving power to something. It's denying that there is power in that. So sometimes when we deny something, we without thinking about it, without meaning to, perhaps we give it power. So we have to be careful when we're denying something that we're really denying the power in it and not the thing itself. You know, for instance, I may not like Donald Trump as a person personally, but, he is our president right now. And so in some ways, I have to work with him and see what he's doing and see all the nuances of how it's unfolding. But I don't have to give power to his, his personality or his worst excesses. But I can still support the presidency and what he is charged with doing. So there's a difference there. And if I get involved in, just castigating the person because I find some of what he says and does egregious, then actually I've given my power away to him, So I don't want to do that. I want to stay neutral if I can, but be strong in my own viewpoint. Does that make sense?
Part of the challenge I think we have with Donald Trump, he's such an unusual case that, personally, I don't really care one way or another whether Donald Trump wants to go in the tanning booth every week or what he chooses to eat or fly. I think those are tangential to the real fact is that the man doesn't make his mind up. And so trying to support somebody who changes his mind every 5 minutes can be a little changing. With some of that mercurial, you wonder, what do you really believe? What is up? Who did you talk to 5 minutes ago that is changing your mind here? But beyond that, I think when we're talking about politics, the Unity was founded by Charles and Myrtle Fillmore. Charles was an avid Democrat. As a matter of fact, he leaned more toward the purist view of communism. He viewed Unity Village as a utopia of communistic in that purist philosophical sense of being the ultimate in equality. Myrtle Fillmore and Rickard, on the other hand, were staunch Republicans, and they had very lively conversations. As a matter of fact, Rickard tried to prevent Charles Fillmore from voting for FDR for president. And he said, mind your
business, right?
And I will vote for who I want to vote for. Yeah, so Rosemary Fillmore Ray was a dear friend of mine, the granddaughter of the Fillmores, and she said, yeah, there was always a very lively discussion of politics going on in the family, that Charles was very Democrat and Myrtle was very Republican, and the kids were a little both, but Rickard was extraordinarily conservative himself.
Interesting. I did not know that. Yeah, very interesting. You know, you said something very interesting at the beginning of the show, and that is that we can forgive these fundamentalist Christian folks who have endorsed the president in many instances. You know, they're not concerned about his egregious behavior and the terrible things that he's supposed to do to women, as long as they get their agenda. And I think that is huge, isn't it? And I think you're right. And it calls into question the integrity of the whole system here. You know, as long as we get what we need, it doesn't matter. How nefarious and horrible the person is, and that concerns me greatly, actually.
Yeah, there's a big disconnect, and for my part, I'm a little tired of post game analysis, of trying to figure out what happened and drilling down into the data about voter behavior, and I'm interested in looking ahead, and I don't have all the answers as to how we got where we are. Something clearly escaped the pollsters and pundits and me, and that's fine. That just simply signals to me that in this sort of Buddhist sense, there's this interdependency between all of these infinite moving parts and a certain fundamental chaotic unpredictability about any complex process. And so all we can do now is simply show up tomorrow morning where we work, where we love, and where we live, and build bridges in real time with real people, and transcend some of the labels like Republican and Democrat and all of the rest of it. You know, I'll tell you what, it's hard enough to heal the rift between the Bernie and the Hillary people, let alone reach across the so-called aisle. But it's imperative that we do that, and one way, and I know this is a sort of trite cliche, but one way is to find that common ground. And by going to the Gospels and the other spiritual literature of the world, we find a rather small set of principles that we say we all revere about love and kindness and non-judgment. But it's when you read the news, it seems to be so absent. It seems to break down in the passion and of the fight. And I don't know where the repair is for that, except I feel as if it is right there in our religious traditions, in our spiritual traditions, in our wisdom traditions. We have the tools we need. They're lying all about us. It's in the application and in the personal commitment. And that's what we count on from our spiritual communities, is to kind of, you know, inflame us, fuel us, support us in that classic Sangha sense. At least I know I'm not alone in this struggle. And that's the beautiful way that I think spirituality can feed us to uncover our best wisdom.
Well, you know, I did an experiment. I was in Australia for 3 weeks recently, and I was noticing how friendly everybody was. You know, the Australians are famous, of course, for being down-to-earth and friendly types, and it was amazing how friendly they were. And of late, I've become a little jaundiced about America and our divided nation. And I thought, when I come back, I'm just going to see how friendly Texans are, because, you know, they are famously friendly, too. And I got to admit that every single interaction I've had in the last 4 weeks, without exception, has been very friendly. People have gone out of their way to help me if I'm visiting somebody in hospital, to show me where it is and where I'm going, and just general on the street and in restaurants. And I thought, this is interesting. You know, if I'm filling my mind with divisiveness, you know, I'm going to find it, right? It's the classic unity idea. We create our own reality. But if I'm looking for the good, I find it. But what's been refreshing for me is I've watched less news, actually. I've just done a little fast from the endless news cycle, and I've spent more time appreciating ordinary people. And, you know, and I've come to a much more happy conclusion that, we have craziness in our world. I mean, the chopping and changing of our president is concerning, and the horror abroad, et cetera. But you know, there's an inherent kindness to most people, I think, and that encourages me.
Absolutely. I think one of the unintended results of Trump becoming president is that people have come together, and not in the way that Donald Trump perhaps envisioned, when
yes.
We have women marching for their rights, and we have people stepping forward to say, we want clarity and we want truth and seeing your taxes and being above board with everything. And I don't think that's letting up, which is quite wonderful. People are really coming together to say, who are we as a nation? What do we hold as valuable? And keeping everybody in Washington, keeping them to keeping the high watch, if you will. It may not
yes.
always work, but they certainly are sitting up and taking notice that a lot of people are attending town halls and not letting politicians get away from the same old anymore.
Yeah, it's so important to talk in those terms, in those positive terms, and I agree with both of you. And when I take that kind of optimistic tack in a Facebook post or whatever, or in person, about how fundamentally good the world is and how fundamentally kind people are, and that's, I think, a powerful truth, then I'm sometimes met, and I'm always surprised by it, but I'm sometimes met when people who are not white males like me, straight males, remind me that, well, of course the world looks great to you. You sit in the catbird seat. You have this incredible privilege that you're not even conscious of. And
right.
try being transgender or, you know, I haven't been pulled over by the police in 30 years. You know, there's a certain, around the edges, there are genuine challenges, and as
yes.
you know, serious spiritual teachers and writers and so on, we have to kind of be conscious of both of those truths. They appear paradoxical, but they're not opposites.
That no, I agree with you.
There's a fundamental goodness, but we can't fall asleep then and think that that everything is okay.
We don't want to whitewash everything. Okay, we're at the break. I'm with Peter Boland and Paul Tenaglia having a lovely discussion, if lovely is the right word, about where politics and spirituality collide. Certainly a meaningful discussion. How about that? Listen to these messages from Unity, and we'll be right back. So join us in a few minutes.
Online Radio brings you inspiring programs on a variety of spiritual topics. Giving to the network is now easier than ever. Simply text Unity Radio to 72727 from your smartphone. You can make a one-time or recurring donation. Your gifts help us offer enriching spiritual programs that reach listeners around the world. Text Unity Radio to 72727. Thank you for your support.
What if you could experience vibrant health, help heal the planet, and be a great friend to God's animal kingdom through simple choices you make at breakfast, lunch, and dinner? Authors Victoria and Adair Moran say you can do this easily, affordably, and deliciously in their new book, Main Street Vegan. Everything you need to know to eat healthfully and live compassionately in a real world. Loaded with practical tips, straightforward information, and fabulous recipes, Main Street Vegan will help you on your journey toward a plant-based diet. The perks include more energy, an easy way to keep your weight where you want it, feeling younger as you grow older, and maybe even a boost to your spiritual life. Purchase Main Street Vegan from BN.com, Amazon.com, or your favorite bookseller.
world as it is.
The world is full of voices, advertising, television, politics, colleagues, family, and friends. All are too happy to tell us how to live. In all of that noise, it's easy to miss the one voice that matters, your own soul. What would happen if you could hear that voice? Imagine the clarity, confidence, and courage that would be yours and the life you could create. Join Janet Connor, best-selling author of Writing Down Your Soul, The Lotus and the Lily, and Your Soul Wants Five Things, as she and her guests explore how to hear the call of the soul and create the soul-directed life. Live Thursday at 1 p.m. Central, only on Unity Online Radio, the voice of an awakening world.
Go inside to find my God.
You've been listening to World Spirituality with host Reverend Paul John Roach. To learn more about Reverend Paul John Roach, visit his website, pauljohnroach.com. Or if you have questions, email him at pauljohnroach@yahoo.com. We now return to World Spirituality.
All right, welcome back to today's show. We're talking about when spirituality and politics collide. It's a huge subject that really unfolds our whole social fabric. There's an old Neville Brothers song. Some of the lyrics are, they've got us hypnotized and hysterical, screaming for blood and justice, hypnotized and hysterical. And there's something to that, isn't there? That there's always this idea that the man, whoever the man is, is controlling us, mind control in some way. And you hear these scary stories about Facebook and how they know exactly what we're doing it's social control. The opposite of that is the Facebook has given us incredible social freedom. So I guess it's a both and world, right? Can you have the one without the other? We were mentioning in the break about Black Lives Matter, and someone who is a Unity minister in Oregon had put the Black Lives Matter sign on outside his church, and it's a topic and even a phrase that is loaded, isn't it? So it's charged whether we for positive or negative, and so it's tough to be an individual, to have a considered approach when we are sometimes hypnotized and hysterical because of charged statements like Black Lives Matter.
Well, there's a new media landscape in the United States.
And there's the police now coming. I can hear the sirens.
Yes, an ambulance, actually.
Oh, okay, yeah. That's good.
There's a new media landscape in the United States and in the world. And, when you and I were kids, there were three channels on TV and, Walter Cronkite and all the rest. And now there are thousands of avenues, and they're all quite, partitioned. And so many people, the number one news channel in the United States is Fox News, and Bill O'Reilly has made a career, for example, out of demonizing Black Lives Matter as a, quote, hate group, as a racist hate group. And so his audience is influenced by that opinion. And so it seems so innocuous to say that people's lives matter. and yet that can become this charged thing. So there's this hypersensitivity about slogans and buzzwords now, and that's one of the many grandchildren of this crazy media age we now live in, with cyberspace and everybody on their own little websites.
Right, and then we're into the world of, alternative facts, right, which has always been with us since the dawn of propaganda, which goes back at least to the Stone Age, but it seems to be gathering greater and greater momentum now. It's almost like we're living in 1984. I know many people have seen correspondences between the current situation here in the States and 1984, newspeak and alternative facts. Where are we with that? Is Christianity itself an alternative fact, depending if you're a fundamentalist or a mystic? It's very alternative, isn't it? Very different views of the same scriptures, for instance.
depends on which version of the Bible you're reading also. Is the King James
right.
or the Revised or the New Revised or the New International Version, which is, you know, very dubious in their translation to the slanting it toward the evangelical perspective.
Right.
When I got to Unity of Bellevue, which is a suburb of Seattle, it's an extremely white area of the country. I think 98% point something here is white, and I thought, well, I'm in a very very progressive, very laid back part of the country. And this winter, the Islamic Center here in Bellevue was set on fire. It was burnt down by some renegade white male who thought that they were the problem. And what was really wonderful is the community really came together, the Christians and the synagogues here, and we've all come together. Actually, the police put a new advisory team together, the Bellevue church and synagogue. The pastors have come together to create an alliance with the police department to advise them on how to move forward with this kind of thing, which is a really wonderful. The police department here is just terrific. They have a LGBT advisory committee, and they are really on top of wanting to make sure everybody is heard and that this kind of thing doesn't happen again. So we're thrilled that the response has been wonderful. People have been donating. Unity donated to their rebuilding effort, and I think little by little we're coming together to see that we truly are all one, and that this is not acceptable anymore.
Right.
And this is the good news. I mean, some of us remember the down sort of in your neck of the woods, Paul, the mosque in Victoria that was burned down in January, and that was such a striking thing. It was burned down on Saturday, and somebody launched a GoFundMe page. I think one of the imams at the mosque. And
mm-hmm,
by Monday,
right.
they needed to raise $750,000, and by Monday or Tuesday, they had about $1.2 million, and so people like me chipped in $100 or whatever all over the country, and that's the real America. I think that's just so heartening. So out of the horror and the chaos and of ignorance and violence, the rest of us are called to rise up and to offer our time and talent and treasure for the rebuilding. And that story can never be overtold. To shift the negative news bias, that is no one's fault. It's just our inherent temperament. We gravitate toward tragedy and horror, and we find good news a little banal. And so I think we have to kind of challenge ourselves to look for good news a little bit more actively.
Well, I think, you know, demagogues, and there's many of them active in the world today, you know, thrive on terror, don't they, and fear and misunderstanding. And so they keep the cycle of you know, hypnotism and hysteria going by doing, you know, over and over again, terror tactics, or if there's some aspect of an attack, then that is given great prominence, even though it doesn't deserve that, perhaps. And so part of the work is, you know, to minimize that, and this was definitely minimized in that case. I'm thinking of Hitler too. You know, Hitler would arrange for, you know, terrible acts and then blame it on the other party. And so, you know, even though he was pretending other people were doing it and creating confusion and misinformation. So part of this, you know, keeping the high watch is to be champions of that, right? With that, that's what we can do as spiritual beings in our roles here, is to champion sanity in place of insanity.
Sure. I think one of the things we do really well here in North America, certainly, that the rest of the countries in the world have not quite understood, is that we have to assimilate people immediately into becoming Americans or Canadians or whatever part of the country is, and then the second generation, the third generation does feel a part of it and takes ownership of the country, whereas in France or some other places around the world, they're not given that opportunity often, and even second, third, fourth generation people do not feel like they're part. They don't feel French or they don't feel Danish, whatever the country is. I think we do that fairly well, and I think that minimizes a little bit bring forth oneness as we are all Americans. As soon as people decide that they are Americans, I think that's
right. Yeah, because you know it's concerning in Paris, for instance, where you have all the ghettos of people from, you know, North Africa or whatever, and they haven't been integrated. I think Britain has done a good job. You know, every time I turn on the BBC, it's either a Caribbean person or an Indian person seems to be one of the commentators. And I know there's other folks as well, but I think I celebrate that because they're fully integrated. They speak with a strong English, you know, accent of some kind or other, and right. They are part and parcel of that society. And I think, you know, that is the way to overcome this is full integration. And I agree. I think we do a pretty good job here in the States of that, you know, not across the board, but I think in general. Yeah.
Well, I think that's our job is to reframe the definition of what it means to be an American. And it has nothing to do with nation of origin or ethnicity. It has everything to do with a prominent display and a commitment to a value system that is inherently inclusive. And to I think most of us just sort of intrinsically understand that as happened the other day, again in Texas, I think, when someone throws a rock and then a Bible through the local mosque, they are signaling their ignorance about the fundamental truth of America, which is to attack a house of worship in a free country is an act of treason against the American ideal of tolerance of all faith traditions. It's born in the worst kind of parochialism and bigotry. And what America really is about honoring our universal human rights and our freedom of conscience. And those are the values that we were speaking about in the last segment that we have to hold close to, and maybe leave it to the political class to sort out the policies that best lead us toward those values, but not be ambiguous or timid about shouting them from the rooftops.
Right. Mm-hmm. You know, it seems that there's been a trend throughout the world towards easy answers, you know. We're tired of the confusion of multi-ethnicities and being politically correct and want to go back to a simpler time. And so for people who aren't really thinking very clearly, it sounds good to go back to those basic ideas, you know, nationalism, etc. Because we saw it in Britain. We saw, you know, the surprise result of their Brexit and leaving the European Union. We see it in France, certainly moving towards the right. We see it in other countries in Europe, and we see it with Trump. I mean, it seems to me it's not an isolated case here. It's a trend, isn't it? So we have to understand the trend here. What is happening? What is the desire? What is the yearning beneath the result? There's something else going on, and to just attack it and say, well, this is craziness, you know, it doesn't help, does it? We have to understand why are people hurting in this way that they would feel it was okay to support, you know, right-wing movements or people who are less than, well, whatever. I don't know, whatever you want to say about Trump, you know. But I can't be political here. So, you know, how do we do that? How do we understand the people that we kind of may despise in some way?
I think we have to be awakened to the tendency towards some politicians to want to divide and conquer. I think Trump certainly is a master of that. He knows how to manipulate people. He's a master PR person. I think that's how the man got into office. He pushed buttons and he knew what language to speak for some people who feel like they don't have a voice, that they are not heard. And he was a master of manipulation in that way. So, but it speaks to something deeper about us wanting to come together for everybody to have worked, for everybody to be prosperous, for everybody to be healthy. And I think we all have different ways of perhaps achieving that, but I think everybody wants the same thing, certainly.
Right.
So, and I believe that our Unity teachings and the New Thought teachings in general do address that way beyond a political format, that we do have a wonderful teaching that we say you're a powerful creation of spirit, you're a spiritual being, have a human adventure here on the planet, and go within, listen to what's right for you, and then move forward and accept all the good that the universe, God, spirit, whatever word works for us, has waiting for us, and it will show up regardless of what anybody does or doesn't do to us politically or in any other way on this human level, human form.
And I think that's what separates the New Thought perspective from some of the more evangelical or fundamentalist views, and that is it is fundamentally optimistic and positive. To have mm-hmm. faith means to trust God or higher truth, that the good is coming about. And I think there's a fundamentally different basis to, as Paul mentioned before, to the basic fundamentalist perspective. Now, I think in my business, in religious studies and philosophy, we tend to understand the word fundamentalism, whether it's Christian or Islamic or political, or, you know, Neil Gorsuch is sort of a constitutional fundamentalist. We call them originalists. So the fundamentalism takes many forms, but what it almost always is a nostalgic longing for a past when things were simpler. And
exactly.
The problem is that past is a fictional creation. It never was simple, and it never existed. So there's a fundamental wrongheadedness in my view. But it's very seductive, because today is complicated, and tomorrow is even more confusing. So I want to go back to a past. And some politicians, as both of you have been saying, have found ways to capitalize on what is fundamentally a fear-based longing. Afraid of the future, afraid of trusting, you know, that view. And I sometimes think they need a bigger God. They need a God that has got this thing in his hand, and we're going to be okay, and to stay positive about where we're going, and to not fear the complexity of the present, and to not fear change.
As Paul said earlier, you know, the irony fills the world, and the idea that, you know, some of the social action movements and movements for justice that have arisen as a result of the election of a new president, you know, are encouraging, because the president has got our attention, if you like, those on the liberal side of things. You know, an irony is strong here at our church. Yesterday, you know, we had a lovely series of services. Of course, it's Easter, And then we also rented one of our fellowship halls out to a predominantly African-American evangelical church that wanted to use it. And I had to go over there after all our services were finished to see how they were doing. And it's, you know, they were all screaming, Jesus, come back to Jesus, give yourself up to Jesus, over and over again, raising their arms up in the air. And I thought, wow, that's a lot different to the service I just conducted at Unity. But then I thought, it's a form of Bhakti yoga, you know, it's a form of devotion to this this image called Jesus. And I thought, it's okay, you know. Initially I thought, I don't know about this, but then I thought, no, it's okay. It's another way that we're trying to find you know, the heart and core of love in our lives. And so, of course, they gave us some rent, which is our primary focus there. We were just renting the space out. But I thought, you know, this is an example here on our campus, you know, offering up very different perspectives on what it means to seek some sanity or truth in our lives. We got about 10 minutes to go, and I know we wanted, Paul particularly wanted to talk about millennials. You know, we mentioned earlier that white males rule the world, and they probably do, even today. But we can also say that baby boomers rule the world, or we think we do. And, of course, we're dying off now quite regularly. Millennials and Generation X's are coming along, but particularly millennials, they're an interesting bunch because they don't follow the same patterns that we did. Even in rebellion, they are different. And they don't necessarily come to church either, right? So how do we help them embrace some kind of spiritual understanding? Or are they already spiritual but don't need to have a church? What's your view on that?
From what I've seen, we don't have a whole lot of young people. Part of the challenge with Unity of Bellevue, and I've told them this, and so I'm not speaking out of school here, is that it feels a little on the cliquey side, that the people who have been there for 30, 40, even 50 years,
mm-hmm.
have their home, and you know, they say that they welcome people, but they don't really demonstrate that in a way that allows people to stay who come to visit and feel that they're a part of this. Somebody gave out an Easter card yesterday. It said, "With love from these two people," and I said, "Why would you do this? You're giving out cards. Who are you? It doesn't say that you're members. It doesn't say anything. But here we are. So anybody new coming in would say, I don't really think I belong here. I don't think I fit in because I don't know who these two people are. And so I'll just find up and allow people to come in to be who they are, whether they're young or older or gay or straight, whatever that might be. And that was how we really found success in New York, was to say everybody is welcome here. No matter who you are, just come and show up being who you are, and let's celebrate you. For me, the challenge with millennials is how to reach them in this age of computer, of internet. I was in a cafe the other day, and there were four friends sitting at a table, and nobody was talking to each other. They were all on their phones, and I watched for a while.
Right.
Nobody said a word. They all sort of just got up and left together without saying anything, and I thought, how do we reach these people who really don't seem to have interpersonal relationships with us? So I'm being an old man of 61, I'm a little baffled as to exactly how one does attract millennials into the church these days.
Yeah, and I'm afraid, nothing to say about this, because I've been having this conversation, and yet, listen, I'll talk anyway. For 30 years, I've been talking to people in religious studies and in the ministerial business about this challenge. This is not a new concern, and it certainly isn't unique and new thought. Every church is full of older people, and maybe that's not true in some communities, but there's a general rule, and I look to my own life, and I know that's highly anecdotal, but you know, between the ages of, you know, 20 and 50, I didn't want to spend my Sunday mornings in a room listening to a guy talk. And it really just comes down to that, you know. I just wanted to go surfing. And there is, I got my contact with transcendent reality through reading Walt Whitman, and through hiking, and through backpacking, and through mushrooms, and through surfing, and through love with my friends, and through learning and service, and that my, you know, my life was my religion, and my body was my temple, and I think a lot of young people sort of walk that path. And so some churches say, well, let's have louder rock music or a light show or smoke machines. And, you know, there's sort of a running joke, even among evangelicals, that stuff doesn't really work, that your service just gets more bombastic and confuses the older folks. And I don't know what the solution to this is, except I know that in my own life I got much more interested around the age of 50 in coming into a community and opening myself up and humbling myself to be led, to be taught, to take suggestions. And I just simply was a little bit pig-headed about all that stuff in those earlier years. Millennials, by definition, are born after 1980. They hardly remember Seinfeld, let alone Ronald Reagan. So I don't know what cultural touchstones we have with them to make that kind of connection.
Right. Yeah, and maybe it's not important either, because it's similar to the Hindu paths of life, where you know you're a householder for many years, and then as you reach 50 plus, you turn your mind to more spiritual matters. But we've always had a fair few young folks in our church, but they're hard to pin down. You know, like you say, they want to do their own thing, and that's in some ways that's good, because they provide a certain energy to the community that wouldn't be there without them. So it's, to paraphrase what they say in England, the church is dead. Long live the church, right? It's always been declining. It's always been problematic, but it seems to continue somehow or other.
Well, the future of church growth really is, for millennials or whoever we're talking about, is live streaming. Very often people come to church, and so they will tap into your service. They'll hit the icon on their phone or tablet and watch you, and they will donate, apparently. They are very willing to do that, and we know now that those who do live stream have seen their revenues go up.
Good.
Which is,
yes.
People do watch, and they will attend when they can, perhaps every once in a while. But I believe that, especially with millennials, they want everything when they want it, where they want it, and so they will. If we can accommodate that in some way, then we can begin to create a new audience, a new community, or expand our community with people of all ages. And people who are housebound and perhaps cannot leave the home anymore.
We've
got the young and the old in that way, and it's very exciting to know that we have some technology to be able to accommodate that.
Yeah, and I think a lot of churches really have to kind of walk a line. And, you know, of course, you want to monetize your media content. Do you sell the CDs after church, or do you give them away? Do you sell subscriptions to live streaming, or do you give it away? And I think the giving away model wins out, because you're just going to distribute so much more freely and more widely, and then the donations go up. That would be my
question. I'm an advocate of that. I think that's true. That's anecdotal, but I kind of believe that to be true anyway.
Right.
But I was going to say, I think Unity Online Radio is an example of this initiative. You know, that it's one of the more important things I think that Unity headquarters is doing right now, because it's reaching hundreds of thousands of people every month and growing. My own show, I reach more people in 1 month. You know, on my radio show, maybe 10 times as many people as I preach to on Sundays for a month. So, you know, it's quite amazing how effective that particular medium can be. So we need to look at very alternative ways. We got to wrap this up, and I'm wondering if we've answered in any way the question we set ourselves, and that is, what happens when spirituality and politics collide? This is what I've got from it. What I've got from it is there's no simple answers, but if we're willing to honestly look with a certain civility and a sense of just exploration, then we're going to make it through, because I think that's what we've done in this hour. We've explored things, and of course we're all kind of on the liberal end of the persuasion, so maybe we're preaching to each other in the choir here. I don't know. But it seems like we've addressed issues without them becoming a roadblock for us. You know, that we've acknowledged there's lots to do and there's many differences, but it's not unsolvable. It's possible, right? What's your take from it?
Yeah,
I
would say spirituality without activism runs the risk of devolving into escapism. And activism without spirituality runs the risk of devolving into the egoic compulsion to control outcomes. So it's, I'm sorry to say, a balance, and we should not deny any part of ourselves, our passion, our anger, our conviction, but to moderate it and to, you know, practice restraint of pen and tongue, as they say in the recovery world, and that's always good advice.
Yeah.
One day Mother Teresa was invited to go to an anti-war rally, and she said, "I would never go to an anti-war rally, but I will come with you to a pro-peace rally." I think that perhaps is maybe the difference, where we can, as spiritual truth practitioners, can step forward like the Women's March, marching for women, marching for something, marching for each other, showing up for each other, as opposed to saying I'm anti something. Well, let's be for something, and that is much more creative and much more workable.
Right.
I believe.
Yes. Yeah, I agree with both of those. And of course, part of the Trinity, isn't it? The way, the truth, and the life. You know, metaphysically interpreted, the way is the way of love, based on the truth of our understanding, but we must put it into activity in our lives. And unless you do that, you're not cooking with the full Trinity, which is what we're charged to do. So for me, the Trinity is not just some nice, you know, theological idea about Father, Son, and Holy Ghost. It's the way that light and love connect, so that we can bring forth the executive power of Spirit as joyous living. And for me, that's powerful.
Right, to do our work without attachment to outcomes, lovingly, cheerfully, joyfully, but with ironclad conviction to what is true and what is real, and to fight for those that have no power, and but not trying to control the outcomes. And the consciousness of renunciation, as the Bhagavad Gita teaches, as Gandhi exemplified, I'm going to take a position, but I'm not going to try to control anybody else or how it comes about. I'm going to influence and bear witness and shed as much light as I can.
And once in a while, you turn over, like Jesus did, you know, sometimes you just got to turn over a table and be okay that we're on the human process, and sometimes we get out, sometimes we flip a table or kill a fig tree, but, you know, that's all part of the process.
So I shouldn't get too upset with Peter when he's ranting on in his blogs, right, about stuff getting righteous, and I'm getting all upset here thinking, oh, this guy's gone too far.
I gotta
see
by.
It. It's another old table being turned. All right, good point. All right, let me tell you about next week's show, and then we'll say goodbye to Paul and Peter. Next week, I welcome back to the show author, blogger, and spiritual practitioner Brian Leaf. And his latest book is called The Teacher Appears, 108 Prompts to Power Your Yoga Practice. Fascinating book. So join me for that next week. Right now, I want to thank Paul Tenaglia and Peter Boland for a fascinating show. Thanks for being with me.
Thank you.
Thank you, Paul.
All right, take care. And take care, folks. I'll talk to you next week, all right? Bye-bye now.
Thank you for tuning in to World Spirituality with Reverend Paul John Roach. Join us every Tuesday at 1 p.m. Central to further examine the spiritual teachings and religious traditions of our world, and to discover the universal truth principles present in all. World Spirituality, only on UnityOnlineRadio.org, the voice of an awakening world. This program is brought to you in part by Unity Church of Fort Worth in Fort Worth, Texas, celebrating the Christ Spirit in all people. Online at www.unityfortworth.org.
Experience the peace and joy promised by A Course in Miracles? Or are you still struggling to truly live your beliefs from moment to moment? Let Reverend Jennifer Hadley help you focus on your intent to be the love, be the peace, through practical application, by walking your talk. Experience the healing live every Tuesday at 10 a.m. Central on A Course in Miracles, living the love, walking the talk, only on Unity Online Radio, the voice of an awakening world.
Dorothy Day, a co-founder of the Catholic worker movement in America, called for not a revolution of arms, but a revolution of the heart. Since the beginning of our nation, the American Revolutionary War, and long before that actually, there's not been a time without conflict somewhere in the world. Makes you stop and think, doesn't it? Certainly we live in challenging times. Each day brings seemingly limitless opportunities to take offense. And each opportunity offers me a choice. I can give a knee-jerk response in fear or anger, or I can choose consciously to respond in love. My choice may seem insignificant. After all, I'm only one person. But as history has taught us, one person can make a difference. Peace can begin with me.
To find a Unity Church near you, please visit our website at www.unity.org.
Do you experience the peace and joy promised by A Course in Miracles? Or are you still struggling to truly live your beliefs from moment to moment? Let Reverend Jennifer Hadley help you focus on your intent to be the love, be the peace through practical application by walking your talk. Experience the healing live every Tuesday at 10 a.m. Central on A Course in Miracles, Living the Love, Walking the Talk, only on Unity Online Radio, the voice of an awakening world.
Are you ready to experience the rich interconnection of spirituality, orientation, and identity? If so, plan to attend Liberating Your Divine Identity, a retreat at Unity Village during Pride Month, June 9th to the 12th. This soul-filled retreat is facilitated by LGBTQIA+ Unity Ministers, with workshops and ceremonies to cultivate a deeper awareness of our spiritual nature. Register at unityvillage.org/IamDivine2022.